Welcome to Creature Feature, a production of iHeartRadio. I'm your host of Mini Parasites, Katie Golden. I studied psychology and evolutionary biology, and today I want to talk to you about animal homes. We'll discover animals who built their homes out of straw, built their homes out of sticks, and built their homes out of bricks and poop and mucus. Discover this and more as we answer the age-old question, what the heck is that ant doing with that larva's butt? First, let's address the elephant in the room, which sadly isn't a real elephant, even though I'd love to be buddies with an elephant. COVID-19, the coronavirus that is now a global pandemic, is certainly scary. I'm not a public health expert and you should always listen to them over me, but here's what I've gathered. This is a very serious public health concern, but you shouldn't panic. This is survivable if we all work together to make ourselves and each other safe. While COVID-19 is not typically a serious illness for young and well people, more vulnerable groups such as older adults and those with serious pre-existing diseases such as heart disease, diabetes, and lung disease are at higher risk, according to the CDC. Just because there's a good prognosis for most people doesn't mean we shouldn't take this very seriously. We can absolutely save lives if we take the steps necessary to protect the community. Some of the things that you can do are washing your hands for at least 20 seconds in warm, soapy water, avoiding touching your face, and practicing social distancing. A lot of us are now practicing self-isolation, avoiding large gatherings, and limiting social contact. This may seem extreme or scary, but it's actually really going to help out. By limiting social contact, we're slowing the spread of disease, and that's important. By slowing down the disease, we're helping to limit the number of cases, so hospitals and supplies don't become overtaxed. Of course, a lot of people still have to work and can't work from home, and I could go on a whole long rant about how our society should be better prepared to take care of everyone in times like these, but I'll spare you that. But if you can limit your social contact, you're helping out everyone who can't and everyone who is more vulnerable to the disease. But of course, staying home can be hard on our mental health. So I thought this time I'd talk about animals who stay cozy in their little homes so we don't feel so alone. Joining me today to talk about cute and cozy animal abodes is our producer, Joelle Monique.
Hey!
Hey there!
Thank you so much for that. I feel very reassured. we are obviously taking a lot of precautions here, which is why I'm back so soon. We're going to try to limit our guests, but hopefully you guys will be hearing some familiar voices soon. So that'll be really exciting.
Yeah, I think we're going to probably take this remote pretty soon if we can. But yeah, we're being very careful here. I know I am in my apartment with two other people because we're all staying home, working from home.
And yeah.
I think it feels apocalyptic because you see like nobody's out on the streets and like
shelves are empty in the stores.
It's not because we're running out of food.
No.
I want people like don't panic too much about food. We're not going to run out of food. It's because of sort of that group psychology of like you see other people buying it and you see shelves empty and you start to panic and you start to load up on food and then it, you know, and then other people, it's like, oh man, we're running out of food, so I need to get some food.
Absolutely.
And it's not to say that it's like, oh, people are all stupid and overreacting. It's just kind of it's a domino effect, but we're going to be okay. Nobody, you know, we're not going to like run out of food in the country. But yeah, I mean, if you can help out people who can't go to the grocery store and like say you have a neighbor who can't get food, you know, like give them some of your macaronis.
And shout out to our farmers who are still working out in the fields, like picking plants and stuff. I saw some farmer aids videos on Twitter today. And I was like, wow, in the rain, in the cold, knowing that we have to eat. Really appreciate you guys.
Yeah.
I'm excited to hear about ants and larva butt, though.
Yes, yes, which will come very soon. And it's so I did, and I think a lot of people are sticking at home when they can, and some people can't. But for those of us who can and are doing it, you know, good job on, you know, kind of helping the community. And here's some animal homes, I think, that are really cozy and might make you feel a little better about being stuck at home. So first, I want to talk about weaver birds.
Okay, let's do this.
So these are, okay, in this section, these are the animals who make their homes out of leaves and straw.
Ooh.
So like the, I kind of have a Three Little Pigs theme going on. I don't know how, I don't know if kids these days even know about Three Little Pigs. Is that a
children,
thing?
I hope you know. That's, I feel like that's a story everybody gets right. in their youth. Like, or I know my mom got it as a child, so.
Yeah, is it all like Peppa Pigs now, though? And it's all Dabs and Tide Pods and Peppa Pigs. I'm old.
Rescue dogs. I'm here for it.
So weaver birds are a family of birds that weave complex nests. There are many different species of weavers with different habits, but typically they're small birds, they're kind of sparrow-like, and they create their nests out of grass and other plant fibers. So rather than that typical little twig bowl that other birds make, weavers, well, they weave complex nests that can hang from branches. Mm. So first I want to talk about the bioweaver, and I sent you some of these photos,
okay,
Joelle.
Okay, so I'm looking at the bioweaver.
Yes.
How, okay, so these homes are like 60s modern sort of homes.
Pod
like
if homes, you've
seen, yeah, if you've seen the fireplaces they had in the 60s, which were these sort of like round freestanding with a tall chimney.
Teardrop, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. That's what this
very
nest
mod.
Is giving me. I
these
love it.
These birds are very mod, yeah. So they're a bright yellow sparrow-like weaver who lives in Southeast Asia and India. They eat grain, seeds, insects, small amphibians, and mollusks sometimes, too. They are highly social, and they will build little cities out of their nests. So they will take over a tree, build a bunch of these little teardrops. It kind of looks like a weird Christmas tree because there's a bunch of these nests just dangling from the tree.
A metropolitan nesting situation.
Exactly.
I love that.
So the males are the homemakers. They will weave the teardrop-shaped nests, and there's an orb bottom with the nesting chamber and an opening on the side and a narrow top that connects it to a tree branch. And it's made out of strips of rice paddy leaves, which are very painstakingly gathered and intricately woven together to form a solid mesh. It's like, it's very solid. It's not like a sort of loosely weaved nets. It looks solid.
I mean, it's holding at least two bodies we're
seeing
birds. Now. So, yeah.
And eggs in there. It's gotta be sturdy. So they are known to make up to 500 trips back and forth to gather plant
Whoa.
Fibers to weave the nest. And they are built on trees or man-made structures if they're near an urban environment. Typically, they do prefer either palm trees or thorny acacia trees, which the thorny trees are great because that offers more protection from predators. And they'll often have the nests overhanging the water. And that elaborate construction and location makes it harder for predators to enter the nest and steal their eggs or their chicks. So if you think about a normal bird's nest kind of sitting in the, like a crook of the tree, a snake can just kind of slither up there
Sure.
and be like, I'm going to get your eggs and snack on those eggs. But when you have this weird mod 60s teardrop shape dangling over water, a snake is going to be like, what? No. What? Aliens? Bird aliens? They're not going to mess with that because they can't, like, figure out how to get in there.
That certainly offers much more of a challenge for them if they wanted to try
right.
to get out there.
Right, exactly. I mean, and they could always just, like, fall right in the water. And you know, there are some snakes that don't mind getting wet, but some of them do. So, you know. They're also bizarrely all built on the east side of the tree to protect the nests from southwest monsoon winds.
Whoa.
Their breeding season is during the monsoon, so having that little extra protection from the winds is very important. And so the way the courtship works is that the males will partially build the nest and females will come inspect the nest, you know, kind of poke around, be like, interesting use of joists. They prefer well-constructed nests, but most importantly is the location of the nest. So like the prima location, you know, like up at the top of the tree are the most favored of nests.
This is like The Bachelorette when they go to the homes and they have to like be like, is your family crazy? Does this house fit my lifestyle? Mm-hmm. Okay, I dig it.
Dangling from a branch over a body of water. That's my kind of guy.
yeah, look at this view.
Yeah.
That hole probably offers like a very cinematic,
a lack of
like
snakes.
Wide.
A
yes.
lack of snakes is kind of my thing. Like,
yeah.
You know, like if you have a snake-proof house, that's what I'm looking for. I think there was, so in my hometown in San Diego, I think there was this big, like weird mansion that was built sort of in the chaparral area, and they built like this huge wall to try to keep the snakes from getting
in.
But the thing is, it didn't keep the snakes from getting in.
Did it keep them from getting out, though? Because that sounds like...
Probably the snakes, like, got in there, couldn't figure out how to get out, and then they just had the big snake pit.
And now it's just a snake mansion.
Just a snake mansion full of bougie snakes.
Little monocle. Mustaches.
Yeah, a little mustache and monocle.
Someone draw this for us, please. Snake mansion. I would write a theme song about it.
Bachelorette.
Amazing.
So once a female has selected the mate with the best constructed house, they will help the males put the finishing touches on the nest, maybe add a little bit of mud inside, you know, just those
cohabitating.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes, though, there are sneaky females who will see a cute little couple with their beautiful little house and be like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to lay my egg in there, and they're going to raise my baby, and they won't even know it.
Oh, well, that just seems great. You raised this
thing. I know. But these birds live some soap opera lives.
It's
like,
very dramatic.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Like, that was my baby you raised. Dun, dun, dun.
Do they come back for their kids?
No.
Like, do we know why they just don't want to raise their child?
Well, because it's actually pretty smart, because then they don't have to spend the resources on that baby, and it gets raised by someone else, and they spend their it's a form of parasitism. So, like, just like a parasite will feed on, like, say, your blood or something, a brood parasite will steal resources from another pair of parents and get them to feed. Like, cuckoo birds are famous for doing this. But yeah. But yeah, sometimes there will be individuals within a bird species that practice parasitism. Like, not the whole species, just a few sneaky individuals. And it's actually kind of interesting how those dynamics work out, because obviously not everyone can do that. You have a critical mass of how many, like, sneaky...
Sure, can get away with
yeah,
it.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, Linda, I see you trying to drop your egg in this basket, and girl, no, you're not raising your child.
It's Easter, though.
That was there when I got here, I swear.
Oh, it's an Easter present. I hear peeping from inside the egg. No.
Oh, God.
So another type of weaver is the sociable weaver. So if you could scroll down to the second image.
Yes. Ooh.
It's going to look like a weird Lorax palm tree thing.
A Lorax palm tree is a really good description. Yeah. I'm going to go avant-garde hut.
Yeah.
It's weird because it's like a round mound, like, on top. Okay. So you know the light poles that are in, like, grocery store parking lots where they have, like, the four square lights on the top?
Mm-hmm.
Imagine that, but there is, like, a grass skirt hut underneath it. It is so...
Yeah.
Weird to look at. And especially we're looking at a number of these trees in the background, and none of them have the nest. So weird.
Well, you know, it's interesting. So I think that's actually a telephone pole. It looks like a tree.
Right?
Though.
I was going to say, I think I'm seeing things connected to
it. Yeah, it's a telephone pole. It looks like a tree, though, because the sociable weaver bird has built so much nest material that it looks like just a big shaggy tree.
Wow.
It actually, the silhouette kind of looks like something you'd find at, like, some weird fashion week thing, like a person with a big, like, hat made out of grass and a big, like, poncho made out of grass. But, you know, huge, telephone pole sized. So the sociable weaver is a bird in the weaver family that makes giant communal homes. So they live in the Kalahari Desert of southern Africa. They look like little sparrows, and their nests look like those weird, huge Lorax-style trees with, like, a big tuft at the top and, like, a huge, like, skirt. They can be just different shapes and sizes, but usually it's just a huge mass of dried grasses. So they will construct these nests on any pole structure. So it could be a tree, it could be a telephone pole, anything they can stick a bunch of dead grass onto, essentially. And they will use these dry grasses, and so many of them work together on this thing that they will make a giant apartment complex weighing up to a ton.
Whoa.
Yeah. So it's basically just this massive bale of hay stuck up on a pole.
How?
Well, I mean, like, with a bunch of individuals working together, sticking stuff on there, eventually it accumulates and you have it, but it's not just like one big nest. It's a bunch of little apartment rooms.
It seems to defy the law of physics that it stays up there without any kind of base. Like, it is just literally, like, you can see the bottom of this telephone pole.
Yeah.
So it's not like it's from the ground or, like, they built it at one point until it reached the ground.
I mean, I guess, so, like, the telephone pole probably has, like, some bars, like, those little, like, sort of bars that go up the telephone pole. So probably once you have that lattice and they keep adding and adding and adding, and then at a certain point, the grasses are sort of woven together so that it is supporting itself by that. But I imagine if you gave that thing a good shake, like in an earthquake, it probably would collapse. But yeah.
See, it seems pretty balanced on both sides. So, you know, obviously it's not pulling the pole one way or the other.
Yeah.
It's just a kind of like a really intriguing technical feat.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is bizarre to see, especially on a telephone pole, because like on a tree, you can see like, how, okay, you got it, all these nooks
Here's
and crannies
a branch
and
or
stuff.
Something. Yeah.
Yeah. But on the telephone pole, it really is sort of a house of cards there. But yeah, so even though it looks like a random pile of dry grass, it's actually full of these little individual apartments, which the weavers painstakingly construct. They tend to them all year round and make constant home improvements. That might be another reason it kind of remains stable, is they're always kind of, you know, refurbishing it, making sure it's stable. And they're little chambers with hallways leading from the entrance. And at the front of the entrance, they have a nice little welcome mat made out of spiky straw, which is actually an unwelcome mat because it's meant to ward off predators. And by building a huge apartment complex, these birds shelter themselves from the elements. They live in the desert, which can become extremely hot and extremely cold. So it ranges from 110 degrees Fahrenheit during the day in the summer to 15 degrees in the winter.
Jeez.
And so those thick layers of grasses both insulate them from heat and cold. And these apartments are so wonderful that even other birds will sometimes take over an abandoned apartment. Well, so pygmy falcons, red-headed finches, and the rosy-faced lovebirds all love to kind of go in and squat. I don't know if they always, like, kick out a bird, but, like, if they find one that is not being lived in.
Okay.
Although the pygmy falcons are kind of stinkers because they, while they... So they're teeny tiny falcons. Are actually quite cute. Like, you know, do you remember in Looney Tunes, like the little chicken hawk? Like the
teeny tiny. Oh, yeah. He's so cute.
Yeah, yeah. They're like that. They're these little, they look like falcons, but mini.
Oh.
And they will sometimes nosh on a weaver bird or a weaver hatchling. But
okay, rude.
I know,
back
right?
The cute statement.
I know, right?
Not at all.
But they aren't so bad. They're not just going bananas. They kind of seem to try to keep it a little bit reserved there. They're trying to keep it in control because I think they realize, like, they got a good situation here and they can't just eat all their fellow tenants. Otherwise, they're probably going to get evicted.
That makes sense.
So
they'll cohabitate with the birds?
Yeah, yeah.
Whoa.
And just occasionally eat a chick. Like, come on.
Okay,
I mean,
that was my rent. It's not your place.
Right.
Listen, okay, I get it. We all have to eat.
Right.
Circle of life.
Like, I feel like if I had a really good apartment neighbor who always cleaned their trash and kept quiet and stuff and occasionally ate a baby, that'd be okay. That'd be no problem.
Given the living conditions of LA, you'd be like, that's just par for the
course.
That's
just par. Yeah, exactly. So now I want to move on a very different animal who also does social weaving, which is the weaver ant.
Ooh.
So weaver ants are found in Australia and Asia. Did you see the photo?
You know, after birds, what my least favorite things are, and it's swarms of
things. I know, I know. I'm sorry. I'm very sorry. So this is not just a swarm of things, but an organized swarm of things that are building a giant apparatus. Is that good, better, or worse?
Look, teamwork makes the dream work, so I'm not here to shame them for doing what they need to do, but it does make my skin crawl to look at it.
Well, I don't know if elaborating on this is going to make it better, but here we go anyways.
I'm ready.
So they're a family of ant species who weave nests using leaves and threads of silk. So the ants will line up along the edges of two leaves and pull them together. And then you have the other ants come along with a larva in their mandibles. And I bet you're wondering what they're about to do.
What's happening?
They squeeze the larva and apply the butts of the larva to the edges of the leaf like a hot glue gun.
Oh my God.
So they squeeze out strands of sticky larval silk to bind the leaves together.
This is child labor abuse. Just squeeze a child and make them work?
What? Squeeze a child, make them spit out sticky glue thread, and stitch those leaves together.
Those
just love.
Should be in school.
I love the idea of it. You have all these ants pulling these leaves together. Imagine like a Pixar movie of this. All these ants pulling the leaves together.
I pictured ants when they're like loading up all of the food on the leaf.
But instead, and then you like you have all right, Joe, bring in the glue team, and then they all have babies that they're squeezing the butts and just going.
Stick the leaf together, we're good. Next baby.
Bring in the next baby, yeah. So they keep adding leaves until they're happy with the nest size. And these can be quite big. So colonies can include over 100 nests and span over multiple trees. So you can also see the image of the ant with the little larva in its mouth. And it's just kind of going back and forth and back and forth with that sticky thread. And then you can see like a whole bunch of leaves. I'd say there's like 50 leaves there all stitched together in this giant ball.
Okay, so guys, when she was explaining like squeezing the baby, I was picturing like on a seam, you know, like the seam of a leaf would touch the seam. But this is like when you crazy glue as a child and you're like back,
back
and forth,
forth
all over.
Cross-stitching,
like,
yeah.
Across the span of the leaf.
It's cross-stitching with larva butt.
And then we have like the actual nest looks more... It's more pop art.
Yeah.
Wow, this is beautiful.
This would make a great DIY video, though. Like, how to like, DIY your own home with baby butt.
I'm imagining people, like, being like, oh, let me get some larva and some tweezers, and we'll just squeeze, and there you go, baby, back in your container.
It's still not as wacky as some of those DIY videos where it's like, here, cut a soda bottle in half. Now take a box of cereal and pulp it and then stick it in the bottle and now you have a steam engine.
The weirdest one I saw was they shredded hot dogs with a paper clip.
Why?
And then they put it in an egg mixture and then Why? They put that in a waffle maker.
Why?
And then they had like egg, hot dog, waffle stack and then they covered that in melted beer cheese.
It's the Tower of Babel, I'm telling you. This is these DIY videos are our Tower of Babel, and some kind of cosmic being is going to strike us down.
They're like, these are insufferable. Make it stop.
Hot dog waffle, you have gone too far, humanity.
Too much.
While keeping social distance is good for our health in terms of the spread of COVID-19, it's tough on mental health. So how can you stay mentally and physically healthy while staying in relative isolation? First of all, don't let the isolation and all the cancellation make you feel doomed. The fact that big gatherings are getting canceled is actually a very, very good sign that people are taking this seriously, and this will help slow outbreaks. Personally, I would be much more panicked if it weren't happening. Schools shutting down isn't apocalyptic, it's preventative. Right now in China, the number of new cases is going down, so it's possible to get this thing under control. Secondly, keep in touch with your friends and family. Call people and actually speak to them on the phone. I know it's weird when we're so used to texting, but it's important to hear other people's voices, have them hear yours, and if you can use video calls, that would be great too. A study published in The Lancet looked at the psychological effects of quarantine and advises that communication with loved ones and friends helps reduce the negative impacts of quarantine. And remember, when you call someone, you're helping them out as well. If you can, try to stay in communication with your social group and colleagues. Having a big support group and still feeling like you're a part of the community you're normally a part of is very important. Also, remember that if you have the ability to self-isolate, you're helping others. So you should take care of yourself, play some of your favorite games, do things that are relaxing for you, and try not to stay completely plugged into the news 24/7. Reach out to other people, cuddle your pets, take care of your houseplants, and look at adorable pictures of sea bunnies. Seriously, Google that. You will not be disappointed. When we return, we'll look at some animal homes made out of sticks and mucus. When did people start constructing homes? According to some archaeologists, it was around 1.8 million years ago by some proto-humans at Oldupai. Archaeologists discovered a circle of stones in a sunken spot of earth, leading some anthropologists to think that it's the foundation to some sort of ancient hut. Other anthropologists think this stone circle may have been made by accident by trees growing and pushing rocks in a circle. Personally, I think it's tree aliens. Aliens disguised as trees who are making secret stone circles to confuse our scientists. I've got evidence. I've got proof. Go to www.treealiens.org.geocities/angelfire.com.
Let's get into the conspiracy. I love it.
So now I want to talk about some animal homes that are made out of sticks and also mucus too. So have you ever heard of bagworms?
No.
So they are a family of moth larva species. There are over 1,000 species of bagworms, and they all make these really interesting protective cases made out of silk and materials that they find. So I want you to look in the dock and look at those little log cabins.
Okay. So those are actual, like, sticks that they built into a home?
Yes. That is made by an insect.
That is imagine if instead of like a four-door or a four-wall structure of a log cabin, they were like, we're going to make like a twisty spiral of logs. And it looks amazing. It's kind of like a pyramid.
Yeah. It kind of looks like a helix, a double helix. Like
oh, DNA yeah, like helix. DNA.
Yeah, but made out of logs.
Anytime you see the double helix in nature, you're like, wow, we're all really connected.
It's like DNA, but made out of twigs, man. We're all the same on this planet Earth. This ship we call a planet Earth, man.
Yeah, dude. Just traveling the galaxy together. It's one unit. Oh, man. This is so cool.
Yeah. So there's a lot of creativity that happens with what bagworms can make their casing out of. So this is just some species that use twigs. But I do want to talk about them because I absolutely adore their little constructions here. So Clania cromeria is a bagworm native to India who carefully constructs a spiraling, tapering tower of tiny twigs.
What?
They purposefully collect twigs of the right sizes to make a log cabin that starts at the base with these thick logs, which are, they're still really, really tiny, like the scale of it. It's hard to tell from the photos, but they aren't logs. They're just like twigs. And probably like, I don't know, under a quarter inch long, pretty tiny. Like, think of a little teeny tiny moth and then like an even teenier tinier larva. So it's about that size. Little teeny tiny fairy cabins. And they will get increasingly thinner and shorter and kind of spiral at the top to a tapered point. And they live like they kind of stick out of the base of this little cabin and they can actually walk around like a turtle. But their shell is made out of a log cabin.
Okay, have you seen Howl's Moving Castle?
Yes.
Picture, like, instead of, like, a steampunk tech sort of vibe, like, it's all natural.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what you're getting. Like, he kind of looks like a beetle, but also mixed with an otter. He's got, like, weird whiskers on his face.
Yeah. No, Howl's Moving Castle is a really good... I love that movie, by the way.
It's my favorite Miyazaki film.
Yeah, I love him, too. I think that is one of my favorite. I do like Spirited Away, too.
Spirited Away is such a classic, and it's beautiful, but there's something very much about, like, an awkward young woman who feels like an old lady that speaks to my heart.
I love it, yeah.
Who's, like, in love with angry boys? Come on, Miyazaki, you get me.
Love me some angry boys. But, yeah, I also just love the creativity of all his little critters and creatures that he has in his movies. But, yeah. Absolutely, this does look like a Howl's Moving Castle made out of beetles and twigs. So they can move around, hunt. The female bagworms actually live in this little structure for their entire lives.
Oh.
They will curl up in their little log cabins. Even after they pupate into adults, they will mate, lay eggs, and disintegrate inside their homes, which is basically like my life right now. Waka waka! So the females pupate into their adult form, which is typically wingless, and just chill out there for a few weeks, which also happens to be their entire lifespan. And adult bagworm, like, don't feel too bad for the females, though, because even though the males get to go out of their little log cabins, they only live for 2 days.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So they can fly, unlike the females. They're fuzzy, black, with transparent wings, and they really only need 2 days to get their business done. And that business is mating.
Wow.
Meet and mate. And then you're done.
And then die.
It's a real hardcore Twinder thing. Like, hey, looking for someone to like mate and then immediately die afterwards with. Thanks.
Listen, it's our life just sped up.
Exactly.
Just really fast. And appreciate that.
Is that like dark or inspiring? I can't really tell.
I'm going to go inspiring.
Yeah.
Listen, they live a full life in just 2 days. And we get so many days to try
exactly.
and live a full life.
Maybe to them, though, like their life, like... Like, we're just like these huge giants that move really slow, and they're just like, to them, 2 days is like forever.
They're like, these idiots, it's hour 7. Get it together, all right? My wings already sprouted. Mm-hmm.
I love in A Bug's Life, there's like a do you remember that? The early Pixar thing?
Totally.
They had a fly at some, I guess at a nightclub or a performance thing, and like they disliked the performance. They're like, I spent half of my life here.
Yeah. It's after the circus when they walk out into the street. Yes.
I just have one more photo of this little log cabin. It's just, it's so crazy, right? It's like this, it looks like it was made by a person.
It really, it like does look like a fairy. Miniature.
Yeah, like a little fairy. Yeah.
In a fairy garden. It's so lovely. And the size, of it seems like impressive that they're able to carry all of this too and balance it. And like, if you're thinking about how do they build it on the outside of their body, is weird too, because they don't have thumbs, y'all. So how is it?
They use their sticky butt silk to keep it together. Yeah. I wonder if stuff like this, now I don't have any evidence, this is all speculation, but I wonder if this is like things like this, maybe not this exactly, but like little constructs like this is what made people think about like tiny fairies and little tiny people.
I think almost it must have been like the little weird things you find in nature, particularly when you don't have internet or large printing presses to let you know, like, yo, this is what's happening.
Right.
Your imagination runs with you. And honestly, if you've ever spent extended time in nature, particularly if you come from like a city or a more like urbanized space, there is feels magical out there. Yes. Like I went to the Redwoods recently and I was like, oh, wow. Yeah. Like magic is real and it is this.
And it's different from what you expect. Like in the Redwood Forest, there's bright green lichen that grows off the trees. It looks almost artificial. It's such a bright green.
Neon almost. Yeah.
Beautiful. But I mean, I know like some legends about fairies are from how mushrooms will grow in circles, and that's just sort of due to the root structure of these fungal colonies. But like they'll see this little circle of like toadstools and think like, oh, that's a fairy ring, and that they all sit on these little toadstools or dance around in a ring, and that causes these circles.
I love human intervention.
I know.
The idea of like interpreting these things as, or like weird gifts, or even like the Irish being like a way of dealing with sick babies that you couldn't help but be like, oh, well, this is a changeling, so I gotta go take it back to the forest. So the fairy will return my rightful baby. And like, if it didn't, then okay, well, that's fine. My baby is living forever with the fairies and they're living a very peaceful, loving life.
Yeah.
I just like the way we did some goof
ups. We did some goof ups in the past.
We weren't always thinking with our correct brain.
Well, speaking of another animal that cares for its young in an interesting way, I want to talk about the African bullfrog, which is the ultimate introvert who creates home out of mucus.
Oh no.
Home sweet home. So they are found all over the continent of Africa. So African bullfrogs are big old boys. The males weigh up to 4.5 pounds.
Wow.
And they can live up to, like, I've seen estimates up to 45 years or 35 years.
Middle-aged frogs.
Yeah. And they'll pretty much eat everything they can stick in their big old mouths. So snakes, small birds, reptiles, rodents, smaller amphibians, their own children, or your hand.
Okay, don't mess with a bullfrog. Copy.
They actually have sharp teeth, which aren't really teeth. They're like these three large tooth-like projections from their lower jaw.
What?
That really hurt when they bite you. So the females can lay up to 4,000 eggs at a time, and the male will actually help with the child rearing. So they'll stand guard over the eggs and tadpoles when they hatch. But once in a while, you know, look, dad's got to have his snacks, and so he will occasionally indulge and eat a few of the tadpoles.
You have so many animals that are just like, I had to eat a baby. What could I do?
Well, look, you know, it's hard. Your baby, you're like taking care of the kids all day. Who's going to blame you for eating a couple? I mean, when there's 4,000 of them and you eat a few, I mean, come on. I don't know. I think it's. But they are actually like kind of good fathers, other than the eating some of their children, because they will painstakingly dig a channel from a pool of, like, if the tadpoles start to get dried out, like their little pool of water starts to evaporate, and they're at great risk of like being dried out and dying. So the male will dig a channel from the drying pool to a larger pond or a bigger body of water, and just kind of painstakingly dig this channel so that the water will flow in and save his babies.
Wow.
Yeah. And if he eats a couple, I think he's earned it.
So, you know, nutritious. He gave life. He could take it away.
Right, exactly. You live under my roof. I eat you sometimes. That's the
risk.
Yeah, exactly.
The favorite, and like maybe he won't be.
That's like our parents said, you're grounded to my mouth. So to protect themselves during dry season, they will dig holes and hibernate from 10 months to up to 2 years.
Okay, yeah. There's hibernation and then there's being lazy. Let's get it together, frogs.
So there's a problem, though, of hibernating during dry season. And they do want to hibernate because dry season is not great for an animal who breathes through their mucus-soaked skin. So they need mucus on their skin to help them breathe. They extract oxygen from the air through gas exchange, and the mucus on their skin helps them absorb dissolved oxygen from the air. And they also do have nostrils and lungs that they can breathe through, but that's not really going to help them that much when they're hibernating underground. So,
for sure.
They will build mucus cocoons for themselves, which is a big old ball of mucus that'll keep the frog from drying out during hibernation.
Ew, but also cool.
Ew, cool. Ew, yeah.
Oh, I don't
want
big old mucus, but wow,
big old
invention.
Ball of dried mucus. Welcome to the podcast about cute animals.
I love it.
So the mucus cocoon actually becomes solid, and it will only soften up when the rainy season returns, and that signals the bullfrog to wake up and emerge from its mucus cocoon unscathed, but disgusting.
A next level skincare routine, and I really appreciate
it. So there's like some skincare products made out of snail slime. Have you seen that?
No.
Yeah. It's like the idea is that I think like snail slime has some properties, at least for the snail, where it helps their skin heal. And so the idea is if we put it on our faces, then our skin also heals. Not exactly sure of the science of it.
Okay.
I have, out of morbid curiosity, tried it. I couldn't really tell a difference, to be honest.
Dermatologist, hit us up.
Not to cast aspersions on it. Maybe it were. I don't know. I'm not going to like. I'm just saying I'm not sure there is hard evidence that putting snail slime on your face will help you with wrinkles. I don't know if it'll hurt, though. Unless you're allergic.
That makes sense. If you're allergic to snails, don't put it on your face. Don't ingest snails.
Also, just don't, like, harass snails. You know what
I mean? Are people out here harassing snails?
Well, I'm saying don't, though. Like, don't be like, oh, snail slime is good for my skin, and, like, pick up a little snail.
Oh, yeah.
Little snail goes like, hello, friend, what are you? Oh, God, no! Shove it!
No! That probably has to be processed, and I don't know. Yeah, don't do that.
Don't do it. I don't know if anyone is doing it, but don't start doing
podcast,
it. Please don't.
We said very clearly no.
Yes. We said no. We are not legally liable for anyone who does it. Don't sue us, snails. Little snail lawyer.
Yeah.
Snail at law.
Now we're in B-movie. We have snail lawyers. I love it.
Yeah. I want to make a motion very slowly. Some of our most incredible human structures are made out of natural living resources. A living root bridge is a suspension bridge made out of live tree roots, found in Meghalaya, India. They're made from the massive roots of rubber fig trees. Builders guide the roots to interlock with the roots of another tree across a river or to the stones and landmass on the other side. These bridges are very strong against weather and decay, as they are alive and strengthen over time. The roots will grow and thicken and conjoin until it creates a very sturdy structure that can support a lot of weight. There's even a huge double-decker root bridge, two root bridges stacked on top of each other. And you don't have to pay for upkeep. The living bridges are self-renewing and sustainable. When we return, we'll talk about some little birdies who make their houses out of bricks and poop.
Ew.
As As children, we were taught that a home made out of bricks is the smartest choice, but those little piggies could have gotten even more creative, as there are some homes made out of innovative materials. Recycled rubber tires have been used, plastic bottles, recycled newspaper, there's even a Buddhist temple, the Wat Pa Maha Cherikawa Temple in Thailand, made out of recycled beer bottles. There's even been attempts to use corn cobs as a replacement for wood. So now let's look at how animals use interesting and unexpected materials to build their homes. So I want to talk to you about the red oven bird.
Cute name.
Very cute. Kind of sounds like a recipe.
Yeah. Red oven bird.
Red oven bird.
It is a bird covered in hot Cheetos.
Mmm. That actually sounds kind of good.
Someone did it for Thanksgiving one
really?
Year. I did not partake. Mm-hmm. It's something I saw online. It looks beautiful. It's like orangish, crusty, golden bird. Yeah. If you tried it, let us know. I'm curious.
I feel like this is another Tower of Babel situation that we're getting into. Like we're doing our crazy DIYs, shredding wieners and making wiener waffles. Ugh. And like now doing like hot Cheetos turkeys. Listen. I don't know. Again, I think like Tower of Babel, it's going to come crashing down on us.
Yeah, it definitely came crashing down on somebody. There was indigestion involved
oh,
with that
boy.
Bird.
Oof. Bad toilet times. So the South American bird lives in these structures that kind of look like ovens. They will mate in monogamous pairs for life and build cozy little mud homes. So pretty adorable.
Aww.
Their homes are domes made out of mud and clay with a side entrance and an inner chamber for the eggs. And they sometimes reinforce it with plant material as well. So if you scroll down, you can see these little homes.
These are so cute. First of all, shout out to telephone poles for being homes for birds.
They are so important for birds.
Literally never thought about how birds were like, oh, tall, like leafless tree structures that other animals can't climb. Dope for me.
You know, it's funny. A lot of people ask, why do birds sit on telephone wires?
Yes.
And I've been asked that. And it's like, because they like to sit on tall things. And there's not a tree there.
It's just available.
Yeah.
Their homes, again, feeling 60s modern chic. There's like.
Very mod.
Three like holes. Basically, if you stacked like three, I don't know what those like clay oven pots are called.
Kivas, maybe?
Kivas, yes. If you were to stack them and you could look inside the little holes, but then they attach on the inside, that would be this bird's nest.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty incredible. So these domes can actually last for years because they're made out of a pretty sturdy material of that mud and plant, kind of creating this like bird concrete. And they can actually also be used by other birds once they're abandoned. But what's interesting, so I think why you're seeing these little ovens stacked one on top of each other is that with each new brood, so every time they lay a new batch of eggs, they will build a new home for
That's
these new
so
eggs.
Cute.
They just keep building new homes.
I like that they
stack
don't
have
to stay in their older siblings' rooms. They're like, no, no, we'll just build you guys your own room. Don't
exactly.
worry about that.
I love that, though. Not having to share a room with your stinky brother. Excellent. I'm just kidding, brother. I love you.
Do you know how they like travel with the mud? Or because it's like stacked on top of a telephone pole, but how do they move mud?
I mean, I think it's similar to that the weaver birds where they just make many, many trips. So they just kind of gather it up in their beaks and like slap it down and go back and get more. It's very labor intensive. Yes. And really cute is that the mated pair will often sit on top of their oven and sing duets together. And
shut up. Pixar, this is the next animal
Pixar,
you make a movie
exactly.
out of. Oh my goodness.
And, you know, I'm not actually sure why they do that. My guess would be to strengthen their pair bond, which is something birds do to kind of like they, when they're monogamous and they form these long term relationships, they do these things to kind of strengthen their connection and their bond.
Listen, you can't end date night just because you got married, okay?
Exactly.
You got to keep things fresh.
So all you couples out there stuck at home, self-isolating, sing together.
Oh, my God.
Do it.
Send us the video.
Come on and slam, and welcome to the jam.
I like that was your first go-to song.
So my boyfriend, I will trick him into leading me into that song sometimes. Like holding up a jar of jam and be like, what is this? He's like, What do you mean? It's jam and slam and welcome to the jam. It's a consistent troll I've got going on. And that's the, of course, the theme song to Space Jam, in case you don't know, in case you're so lame you don't know.
Please fix your life and go watch Space Jam, the original.
Please fix your life.
The sequel is coming.
It is ready. At some point, yeah. But like also he wanted some more jam from the store, so I bought some, and in the fridge I put a sign that said, come on and slam and welcome to the, and then just like the jam was under it.
That's very adorable. Yeah. Y'all are so cute.
So another adorable bird pair are the hornbills. So hornbills are that Zazu type bird, like from The Lion King, who live in tropical regions in Asia and Africa. So there are many different species of hornbill. The one you're probably thinking of are the ones with like that big, like weird bulky thing right on top of their beak. And that big bulky beak actually really helps them to fight, hunt, and construct their elaborate nest. So a little bit about that hornbill beak. Now, it differs from species to species, but they typically have a hollow protrusion on the upper bill called a casque, which in some species just helps strengthen the bill, but in others, it's so big it can act as a resonance chamber for louder calls. And in helmeted hornbills, the casque is actually not hollow and is infilled with what's called hornbill ivory, which is a hard keratin. And it is these casques that are just solid are used as battering rams in jousting matches with rival males. So these are multifunctional, multi-purpose bills that vary amongst species. But one of the most common things that they are used for is to build their weird, isolated nests. So hornbills are typically monogamous, and they work together to ensure the safety of their eggs and chicks. So female hornbills will find a tree hollow and lay their eggs, and to make sure that snakes and other predators don't get their eggs and chicks, they will work together to seal the female in with her eggs.
Whoa.
What's that like Poe story, the cask of Amontillado?
Yeah, where they seal the guy in the tunnels under Paris, which house a lot of dead bodies.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, it's like
horrifying.
This only lovely and sweet.
Yeah,
and thoughtful.
Protecting a mom and her babies.
Right, so They will use mud, poop, and fruit pulp to create this kind of weird concrete and seal off the entrance of this tree hollow. And before it gets too small, the female will actually squeeze into the cavity and she'll sit in there, and then they will continue to build up this entrance until it almost completely cements her in. Whoa. And it just leaves a teeny tiny hole just big enough for the male to basically drop little bits of food in through. So it's so small that snakes and other predators can't get in, and the male just has to kind of like, boop, put a little berry in this hole so that he can feed the female and the chicks. And at this point, the female becomes completely reliant on the male to go out and get food and bring it back because she can't
leave.
Very
scary thought.
Yeah.
Bring back all the non-nutritious food. You're going to be like, babe, not burgers again.
Yeah.
I need some fresh fruit.
He's like, I asked for berries, not oops, all berries, Cap'n Crunch. Come on. So when the chicks are grown and big enough to leave the nest, the female will Kool-Aid Man style burst out of this concrete wall, just like, oh yeah, motherhood over.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so worst case scenario, if something happens to the dad, the female at any time can just break down and be like, listen, I'm hungry. I have to get out of here.
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting question. She might abandon her nest, but, you know, unfortunately, like, she might stay there and just kind of, like, keep hoping and, you know, could have a tragic ending. So it's really important for that male to go out and get food. But, yeah, it's a... I'm not sure exactly what the strategy. I mean, my strategy would be to Kool-Aid style burst out of there, find that male, and give him a stern billing to with
Absolutely.
My big old beak.
Okay, cool. Well, I'm glad she has a way out when she's ready. That scared me. I was like, wait, he have to break her out, or do the baby birds like have special, I don't know, juice sacks that dissolve it? Listen, I never know what you're going to bring me. It's always wild.
No, she bursts out there like a Hulk. I mean, can you imagine how satisfying that is? Like, your birds are ready to leave the nest, and you're like, I am out of here. But kablam!
She's got
to
be ripe, too. Like, it's so much time in a very confined space. She's like, I'm going to go shower and you watch these babies, because I'm done now.
So finally, I want to talk about an animal who not only builds really interesting home, but like they look like pieces of art. So the caddisfly is a insect that is similar to the bagworm in that their larva builds protective casings. So caddisflies are an order of insects with over 12,000 species, and the adults are moth-like flying insects. They're related to but not contained within the order Lepidoptera, which is moths and butterflies. And they're actually the titular flies that the bait in fly fishing is meant to imitate.
Oh!
And the reason is that the caddisfly is partially aquatic. So their larva and pupa are aquatic with gills that they evolved after being terrestrial to evade land predation. So they first evolved terrestrial breathing apparatus, and then they're like, oh, dang, no, thank you, and went back into the water because of all the predation. So most spectacular are the caddisfly cases. So these are hard, portable homes that the aquatic larvae make to protect themselves. So they're made out of silk, saliva, and basically anything they can find. So this can be sand, pebbles, snail shells, plant material. Some of them are even like the Cremeria bagworm that builds those little log cabins, except it makes it out of aquatic plant stems.
Oh,
and
cool.
So if you scroll down, you can actually see some example of these things.
These are stunning.
Right?
Oh, whoa. The one that made like out of what looks to be plant stems is so unique.
I'm having trouble describing it, but it looks like a weird, it looks like a salad you would get at like a way too fancy restaurant, like a tasting menu, like at Spago or something, where they're like, here's your salad that has been constructed into a tesseract.
Some of these look like, oh gosh. I just had the word. I want to say collages, but fancier. Mosaics.
Mosaics.
That's what it is.
Yeah, exactly.
Some of them look like mosaics, this one with the shells that's kind of like compact. And then the one with like, whoever found this giant purple stone to put right at the top of his head is honestly like
a divine diva. I love it.
This is a prince level fly
here. That is
here.
One of my favorite colors. It's a beautiful accent too. It's just like, and this big stone.
Yeah,
it's like
all the
a
other
big button.
Stones are kind of like earth tone colored, and this one is like just a beautiful purple.
This is the Lady Gaga of caddisflies.
Preparedness.
Beautiful.
Holy crap. Sorry, I'm getting to the second level here.
Well, this requires some explanation. So to demonstrate that they'll basically use anything in their environment, there is an interesting art piece by French artist Hubert Duprat where he collected caddisfly larvae, stuck them in an aquarium, and planted a bunch of precious materials in their environment. So they would build beautiful cases made of pearls, gold, opal, and other precious gems. So in these photos, you can see they've got, it's like this, they look like jewels, like jewelry, because they've used like gold. They've lined their little larval bodies with gold and pearls and gems, and they are really bougie.
If you've ever had the privilege of seeing like very ancient jewelry, like the stuff, like the first, what is it? The first pharaohs of Egypt, like the early ones before it became like a major place, or like
before everyone discovered Egypt.
Before everyone was like, oh, this is our homeland too. Or like very early Greek stuff. It's like sort of they've flattened out the gold pieces. Mm-hmm. It almost looks hammered in places, which obviously these guys are not picking up hammers. And then they've woven like gorgeous pearls and this blue sort of like opal-y thing. Oh my gosh.
They're like really artsy brooches.
Yeah,
I want to say a brooch.
That's what I thought they were. They thought they were like brooch. I call it a brooch. I don't know if there's an appropriate way. I don't know if there's a right way.
I'm really kind of revealing how unfancy a person I am that I don't even know what a brooch is.
It does look like a brooch. I would wear this and
brioche?
I hate bugs. Not the bread. No. Katie.
I've been wearing bread on me this whole time. It's super embarrassing.
Listen, wild.
Thought it was the fancy thing to do.
This is gorgeous. Like, I didn't think anything a bug could create whatever, like, inspire me or feel trendy. But, fashion designers could use this as inspiration for
sure. I want to know, like, what their process is. Like, if they are just, like, slapping it on any old wear or if there's some amount of intention there.
There seems to be some pattern, but not a lot. Like, the pearls are sort of... I don't know if the pearls were stranded first. You know what? I can't tell if it's a strand of pearls that they sort of woven in, or if they have individual pearls.
I mean, they're using their sticky silk, as is often the case, to attach these to their body. But yeah, I almost wonder if there is a pattern. I actually don't know this. Again, wild speculation. My favorite thing to do on the podcast is that they probably try to make it as close to their environment as possible while still making it a protective casing. So it's both a level of camouflage and protection. So they probably want hard materials that protects their soft bodies, but also camouflage. So if they can get things kind of stacked up in there that I guess like is a nice random distribution of their environment that's still protective. Yeah, I don't know, because like they seem to be kind of putting a bunch of gems around and in kind of clusters, and maybe thinking like this will look natural in this my aquarium full of fancy gemstones.
I definitely see that. I was trying to figure out, like, it doesn't seem to be like a weight distribution thing at all, because one of them has the pearls like right by their head, one's like on the very butt, and one's sort of in the middle. The stones don't seem to, but the colors seem sort of evenly distributed, like where the blue is sort of like placed evenly throughout. These are really fast. Like, I could stare at these all day.
I know. It was beautiful. I kind of want one.
Right. Oh, no, absolutely. You know? I would even take one. I'm going back to the photos now of the natural materials.
I know.
And like kind of comparing and contrasting, similar. I would take any, like, this is the most gorgeous art I've ever seen created by an animal before.
I know. I mean, like, I know these are aquatic, so I couldn't have one live on me as a brooch on my chest, but I kind of want it
maybe
too.
When it has vacated.
Yeah. It's maybe I could get like bagworms. The other insects we talked about are terrestrial, so maybe I could get like a bagworm friend and have it live on me and be like a brooch, and I could go to a fancy party and be like, oh, who are you wearing? And it's like, well, I call him Tammy.
Oh no. I would actually really love to see this. You'd be the belle of the ball, all natural.
I'll be the belle of the ball. Covered in bugs. Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Joelle.
Thanks for having me back, Katie.
Yeah, I hope this kind of makes people feel a little better about being stuck in their homes, because, you know, we ain't alone on this earth.
Nah.
Lots of other animals are huddling in.
And making it work, getting through the day.
Making it work by filling it with precious gems and poop. So, yes, fill your homes with precious gems, love, laughter, and poop. Yeah. So, you got anything you want to plug?
Yeah, you know, keep listening to the podcast here at iHeart. Nerdificent Night Call is going to be, if you guys are concerned about COVID and want to hear more as the developments happen, Night Call releases every Monday, and they are really doing a deep dive. This Monday, they'll have a call with a doctor who kind of gives them like advice about like, what do you want to be concerned about? What's not so to be concerned about? How can you continue to live a normal life while practicing social distancing, which was really comforting to me. And you know, we've got a lot of new exciting stuff to coming up, so you can follow me on Twitter at Joelle Monique, and I'll give you guys the updates there.
Yeah, I think we are very, very fortunate enough to be in an industry where we actually can keep doing stuff remotely, and I think that is a great privilege that we get to keep doing stuff, and I really appreciate everyone who is still listening to the podcast, and I am really rooting for everyone out there. You can follow us on Twitter at Creature Feet Pod, FEAT, not FEET. That is something very different. We're also on Instagram. I might go a little stir crazy at home, so I'll probably post a lot of pictures of my dog. So please do check that out. It's Creature Feature Pod on Instagram. You can follow me on Twitter, Katie Golden. Just some of my Katie thoughts I have. If you don't want to peek behind the curtain and see all my Katie thoughts, I do not blame you. But if you do, I'm at Katie Golden on Twitter.
They're pretty great, guys. You definitely do.
And of course, as always, I am at Pro Bird Rights, where, listen, birds, we got it going on. We know, birds know what they're doing. I think we should all just become slightly more, be the bird you want to see in the world.
Oh, I like that.
So just so you know, as far as I know and what my plans are is to continue to release the show every week. And I really Appreciate you guys still tuning in. And yeah, if you're enjoying the show, one way you can really help me out is rate, review, subscribe, and download the podcast. Like, it doesn't seem like it does anything because you're just clicking buttons, but it actually really super helps me get up in those algorithms, and that is so important for me to keep this podcast going. So thank you guys so much for listening, and I will see you next Wednesday. Creature Feature is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts like the one you just heard, visit the iHeartRadio website, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you listen to your dang old podcasts. Thanks to the Space Cossacks for their super spooky song, Exolumina. See you next Wednesday.